Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. I've been taking in my neighbors' newspapers while they are away, and that includes the New York Times, which has had on its masthead since 1897 all the news that's fit to print. Well, I found all the news for today's program on the website of the American Academy of Ophthalmology. That's abbreviated. The website is aao.org. It is packed full of all the eye news that you could possibly imagine. Topics that I chose for today include retina scans, dry eye, glaucoma surgery, and cornea transplants. Most of these are people stories, but the first one is straight news. And once again, all the information came from the American Academy of Ophthalmology. The first article, retina scan may give early warning of Alzheimer's disease. This was written by Kate Roche, reviewed by Dr. Sunir Garg, who was mentioned in the article. It was published at the end of September this year. A new study shows that an eye scan may be a relatively easy, inexpensive way to test for early Alzheimer's disease. The study builds on research showing that closely examining the retina might help detect Alzheimer's in its earliest stages. The retina is made up of brain tissue. Retinas are connected to the brain via the optic nerve. Changes in the brain from dementia, including Alzheimer's, can also show up in the retina. In a small study, researchers at Washington University in St. Louis identified about 30 people with no signs of Alzheimer's. Then they tested all of these people with two ways of measuring biological changes associated with the Alzheimer's disease. One is a PET scan, PET, a PET scan of the brain. The other is an examination of spinal fluid. A little more than half the people tested showed no signs of Alzheimer's in these biological tests. The others had biological signs or markers of the disease. These markers are proteins or clusters of proteins found in the brains of people with Alzheimer's. So next, the researchers scanned the eyes of everyone in the study. They used a scan called optical coherence tomographic angiography. It's abbreviated OCTA. The test called optical coherence tomographic angiography, which creates a detailed cross-section of the retina. OCTA scanning can map blood vessels in the retina. They found changes in the retinas of the people who also had biological signs of Alzheimer's. The people without Alzheimer's markers had normal retinas. The biological tests for Alzheimer's, looking at spinal fluid or a brain PET scan, are complicated, expensive, and actually pose risks for many patients. They are rarely used to diagnose the condition. Most Alzheimer's is diagnosed through memory tests or observing behavioral changes. And by the time changes in behavior are noticed, the disease can be advanced. While Alzheimer's has no cure, medications and social programs may slow the disease. Experts are eager to find ways to diagnose Alzheimer's early. Ophthalmologist Dr. Sunir Garg, a retinal specialist at the Wills Eye Hospital in Philadelphia, called this Washington University study an exciting start. But he cautioned that the study is small and much more work is needed. Here's a quote. "Hopefully, this will stimulate a lot more research," Dr. Garg said. "We know from previous studies that certain changes in Alzheimer's disease have similarity to changes we see in the retina. The retina is a direct extension of the brain." Dr. Garg stressed that patients with abnormal OCT scans should not assume that they have Alzheimer's. And he says, just because you have changes in the retina doesn't necessarily enable us to diagnose Alzheimer's. The eye is one of a few parts of the body where an ophthalmologist can see blood vessels, nerves, and other tissues that are usually hidden. And for some conditions, changes in the eye may be the first sign of trouble. diabetes, high blood pressure, autoimmune diseases, sexually transmitted diseases, and cancer have all been diagnosed from eye exams. And eye exams have even saved lives that would have been lost to a stroke. Research on the links between eye health and brain health is growing. There is much more to learn, Dr. Garg said. Now we switch into some human interest stories, I like to call them. These, again, once again, are all from the American Academy of Ophthalmology website. This one is titled, News Reporter Rescued from Severe Dry Eye. This was written by Suzanne Medeiros, published at the end of September of this year. It was reviewed by three doctors, Thomas Clinch, Diana Steldenridge, and Thomas Steineman. The article starts by saying, living with chronic pain often leads people to a dark place. Shannon Bream, she had an 18-month ordeal with constant searing eye pain. This left her exhausted, depressed, and ready to give up on life. It was an unfamiliar place for a typically sunny person to find herself. She is a Fox News reporter, and she managed during the day by keeping lubricating eye drops close at hand, her purse, her car, her desk, even in the shower. At night, she'd set her alarm for every few hours to instill more eye drops to keep the pain at bay. Her doctors assumed she was suffering from dry eye, a common eye condition for women in their 40s, but she got no relief from prescription treatment. With no definitive diagnosis and no control over her pain, her days had become an exercise in survival. Eventually, she found an ophthalmologist who gave her the diagnosis she needed and the empathy that she wanted. Together, they became a team working to manage her chronic pain and enabling Ms. Bream to regain her life. Shannon Bream's trouble began one night in 2010 when she awoke suddenly with a pain in her left eye, so searing, she said, so searing, it sat me straight up in bed. A few weeks later, when it happened again, she called her doctor. He prescribed re-wetting drops for dry eye, but the nighttime episodes continued. Another doctor agreed her eyes were dry and added Restasis, a prescription medicine that treats chronic dry eye. Restasis helped ease the dryness, but the incidents became more frequent. Both eyes were now affected, and she was experiencing pain nearly all the time, often with double vision. Here's a quote from her. I was living in a nightmare. I was desperate for sleep, but I knew that when I did, there was a good chance I would wake up in pain, Bream explained. She continues, it pushed me to my limits, emotionally and physically, because I had no answers, and there seemed to be no hope. When she described this struggle to her doctor, he diagnosed her as being too, quote-unquote, emotional. That's when she hit bottom. His words sent her spiraling into despair. Instead of doctors, she consulted internet message boards, where she found others with similar symptoms and stories of being turned away from emergency rooms and doctors' offices. Some even spoke of ending their pain by ending their lives. Bream understood. The only thing that kept her going was thinking about how her family and friends would cope if she left them behind. When she confided her dark thoughts to her husband, he vowed to empty every bank account and travel the world to get a concrete diagnosis and treatment. Turns out, they didn't even have to leave town. They found a world-class cornea specialist in Washington, D.C., and his name was Thomas Clinch. He's an M.D. Dr. Clinch knew that what she had, as soon as he read her file. It's called epithelial basement membrane dystrophy. A little while later, it's called corneal dystrophy. So once again, he knew what she had as soon as he read her file. Epithelial basement membrane dystrophy. And also, she had recurrent corneal erosions. The cells that make up the outer layer of her cornea don't adhere well, so they easily tear or separate from the underlying cornea, causing a painful erosion. These erosions or tears can occur at any time, but people feel them most often while they sleep, or when waking up in the morning. That's because in deep sleep, the eyes move rapidly back and forth across the eyelids. If the eye is dry, it can stick to the eyelid, which causes this painful tearing on the surface of the cornea. Nearly every time Shannon Bream went to sleep, she re-injured her eyes. There is no cure. Instead, she would have to learn how to manage her condition. Everyone is a little bit different. Dr. Clinch and Bream would start simple and figure out which treatments worked best for her. Several weeks later, as her eyes began to heal, Bream actually slept for 8 hours, the first time in more than a year. Bream's condition is the most common type of corneal dystrophy, affecting 2% of the population. So right here, it's called corneal dystrophy. Up above in the article, it was called something else. I'll tell you that again. It was called epithelial basement membrane dystrophy, or simply corneal dystrophy. Dr. Clinch sees patients every week who suffer from similar conditions that cause severe dry eye. It's not uncommon for these patients to come to him after seeing 3 or 4 other eye professionals first. They're frustrated and they're ready to vent. Dr. Clinch has learned through experience how to manage this energy, steering the dialogue away from the emotions so he can learn enough to treat their disease while making the patient feel heard. Dr. Clinch and Bream successfully managed her symptoms with medication for several years, but eventually her condition deteriorated to a point where she needed surgery. Dr. Clinch performed a type of laser surgery called phototherapeutic keratectomy. I'll repeat that. Laser surgery called phototherapeutic keratectomy. This surgery removed the top layer of her cornea, leaving a rough surface so that the cells can adhere better, making the cornea more resistant to the tearing. After a painful recovery, she is doing better than ever. In a quote from her, "My eyes will never be totally perfect or pain-free," Bream said. "But thanks to a caring physician who met me halfway in a very difficult time, I feel the best I've felt in years." So why did she wait so long to find a new ophthalmologist? Simply the exhaustion and depression of living with chronic pain left her in a diminished state, she explained. She said, "It's such a hopeless place to be, but I hope my story will encourage other people to live with chronic pain and don't have a diagnosis to find the right doctor," Bream said. "You must be your own fiercest advocate when it comes to your health. Walk away from medical professionals who dismiss your concerns, and don't quit searching until you find someone who will truly partner with you to find the answers you deserve." Next, another human interest story, glaucoma surgery saves a woman from a life of darkness. This was published in January of this year, 2018. It was written by Suzanne Medeiros, and it was reviewed by Dr. Chastity Singleton and Dr. Andrew George Iwatch. And Dr. Singleton is mentioned in the article. In fact, she has a prominent story as part of this article. So once again, the headline, glaucoma surgery saves a woman from a life in darkness. When Peggy Wellman noticed she was having trouble seeing, she went to Nashville General Hospital, thinking she just needed a new pair of glasses. But ophthalmologist Dr. Chastity Singleton diagnosed her with an eye disease that can't be fixed with glasses. Wellman, this is Peggy Wellman, was slowly going blind from glaucoma. By the time Dr. Singleton examined her, she had already lost 90% of her peripheral vision in one eye and 80% in the other. And glaucoma is one of the leading causes of blindness, affecting about 2.2 million people in the United States. And by the year 2020, that number is expected to balloon by 50% to 3.4 million. Because there are no symptoms early on, about half the people with glaucoma don't even know they have it. Wellman was devastated. She is 62 years old and she just retired. Overwhelmed by the diagnosis, Wellman dissolved into tears during her first visit to Dr. Singleton. She said, "It just didn't seem real to me." Except in rare cases, a person who has glaucoma usually feels fine. They experience no pain. Their eyes aren't red or irritated, and that's because the glaucoma, or because the disease progresses slowly. It begins by gradually destroying peripheral vision. And because people are unaware of early peripheral vision loss, a patient can lose most of it before they even know they have glaucoma. Central vision, the vision used to read or drive or watch TV, is unaffected by glaucoma until the disease is advanced. Once vision is lost to glaucoma, it cannot be regained. When caught early, glaucoma can be treated with eye drops or an in-office laser treatment. But in advanced cases, surgery may be required to slow the vision loss and prevent further damage. One of Peggy Wellman's relatives had gone blind from the disease, glaucoma we're talking about. The relative felt fine and was in denial about the severity of her condition, so she refused surgery. Like her relative, Peggy Wellman was also hesitant to have surgery, but Dr. Singleton earned her trust by being honest and treating her with respect. A quote, "I told her, I can't give you your vision back," said Dr. Singleton, "but I can help you hold on to the vision you have remaining so that you can function like everyone else." Dr. Singleton kept her word. Wellman's vision is now stable after glaucoma surgery. Dr. Singleton also performed cataract surgery, which improved Peggy Wellman's central vision, giving her now 20/40 vision. While she is still a bit overwhelmed by her diagnosis, she is now taking control of her health and looking forward to her retirement. Now, more details about glaucoma. Glaucoma hits African Americans hard. It's 6 to 8 times more common among African Americans than whites. Glaucoma also strikes about 10 years earlier and progresses faster in African Americans. Blindness from glaucoma is about 6 times more common. So why the difference? Research shows that African Americans are genetically more at risk for glaucoma, making early detection and treatment all the more important. Hispanics are also at higher risk, as are people older than age 60, people who have diabetes, and those with a family history of glaucoma. People who are at high risk for glaucoma should have a comprehensive dilated eye exam at least every 2 years. It's not uncommon for Dr. Singleton to see patients like Peggy Wellman at the National General Hospital, a community hospital that serves the underserved and underinsured. Patients frequently come in unaware that they have a blinding disease, and then they get hit with the shock that the disease is already advanced and that they have needlessly lost much of their vision. Dr. Singleton recently saw one of Wellman's cousins who was sent to her for a comprehensive eye exam because she has diabetes, which can also damage vision. Dr. Singleton had to give her the same news that she gave Peggy Wellman. She has late-stage glaucoma and has suffered significant vision loss. She had no idea. Dr. Singleton has since treated several members of Wellman's extended family and expects to see more. Wellman said, "I'm always bragging about her. I tell them, you are going to see someone who is going to help you." The next section of this article is called Improving Access to Care. Genes aren't the only reason that some racial and ethnic minorities are more likely to go blind from glaucoma. Difficulties in access to health care also play a role. A study published this year showed that even when a patient has health insurance coverage through Medicare, many poor Americans and persons of color with glaucoma still receive less care than the others. Many of them are going without the vital screening exams that detect glaucoma in its early stage, when vision can be preserved. It is a complex problem with many causes, one of which is mistrust of the medical community and lack of awareness. Dr. Singleton's approach to the problem is to go out to churches and health fairs, raising awareness about the importance of regular eye exams. Dr. Singleton said, "You have to be active in the community. That's hard as a physician because we don't have a lot of time, but we have to make time if we care about what's happening to the people around us." Dr. Singleton doesn't just take care of patients, she builds relationships with them. She says, I find it a privilege to work with these people, and I let them know that. I thank them for allowing me to take care of them and putting their trust in me. They don't have to do that, and that helps build a relationship with my parents. Now that Wellman knows more about glaucoma, she has helped educate her family about the disease. Her 35-year-old son is already getting regular exams to screen for glaucoma. He knows that even though he's not experiencing pain, it doesn't mean he doesn't have the disease. People age 65 or older and concerned about their risk for glaucoma may be eligible for a medical eye exam and up to 1 year of care at no out-of-pocket cost. This is through an organization called Eye Care America, a public service program sponsored by the American Academy of Ophthalmology. It matches volunteer ophthalmologists with eligible patients in need across the United States. Since 1985, Eye Care America has helped more than 1.8 million people. I will give you contact information about Eye Care America. First of all, it's spelled E-Y-E, capital C-A-R-E, and then the word America, Eye Care America. You can contact them through the American Academy of Ophthalmology website. That would be aoaao.org. They also have an 800 phone number. This is for the Eye Care America program. It's 1-877-887-6327. That number's a little tricky in the beginning, so I'll tell you that again. This is the number for Eye Care America through the American Academy of Ophthalmology. The phone number is 877-887-6327. Additionally, Medicare provides an annual dilated eye exam for Medicare beneficiaries over 65 at high risk for glaucoma. Those eligible for this service are people with diabetes, a family history of glaucoma, or any African Americans over the age of 50. This is through Medicare. To learn more about this, there's an 800 number, 1-800-633-4227. Many university-based medical schools, here's another idea, university-based medical schools sometimes offer discounted services to those who qualify. You can inquire at your local university. Now we come to a fishing accident. This headline reads, Cornea Transplant Restores a Young Boy's Sight After Fishing Accident. This was written by Beatrice Shelton. It was published in July of this past year. Good time to publish it, fishing season. This was reviewed by three doctors, Dr. Diana Seldomridge, Dr. Shahzad Mian, and Dr. Thomas Steineman. At age 7, a boy named Colton Thompson received the best gift ever, sight. Colton's vision began to dim not long after he suffered a gruesome fishing accident. In eager anticipation of a big catch using a new lure, his older brother sent a hasty cast into Colton's left eye. After emergency surgery to remove the lure, it appeared that he might escape any lasting damage. But then the pain started, and he was unable to see well, even with his glasses. Colton would need a new cornea, the clear, dome-shaped surface that covers the front of the eye. Thanks to the generosity of a cornea donor and a talented ophthalmologist, Colton's vision was restored. Living in rural Michigan, Colton's parents, Caitlin and Jacob, took a carefree attitude of parenting their 6 children. Here's a quote, "Just let kids be kids," his mom, Caitlin, likes to say. Let kids be kids. The warm summer day that Colton and his 4 tow-headed little brothers set off for the pond on their property was no different. When they got to the water's edge, Colton knelt to tie his shoe, just as his brother cast that lure. It landed in Colton's eyelid. As he screamed in pain, he immediately reached for his eye. Luckily, Caitlin remained calm and told him not to touch his eye. Her instinct was spot on. Ophthalmologists caution people to never try to remove a fish hook near the eye or never put pressure on the eye because it can cause more damage. Because Caitlin was calm, Colton also stayed calm. So calm that he fell asleep in the car during the 40-minute ride to the hospital. after emergency surgery to remove the lure from his eyelid, the surgeons had good news. Instead of digging deep into his eye, one of the three hooks on the lure embedded in his eyelid, while another hook scratched his cornea. It was possible that the eye would heal on its own after surgery. Colton went home with a pair of prescription glasses and a good prognosis. The sutures were removed from his eyelid a few weeks later. It appeared that he was on his way to a full recovery. Caitlin, the mom, was hopeful her family's ordeal was coming to an end. But a few weeks after the fish hook was removed from his eyelid, Colton began to lose vision as a significant scar formed on his cornea. He started to squint to shield his eye from bright light. Eventually, he kept his left eye closed all the time. It was too painful, and he couldn't see. So Caitlin got a referral to see an ophthalmologist. It was about 3 months after the injury when they got to see Dr. Shahad Mian at the University of Michigan Kellogg Eye Center in Ann Arbor. The scar was large and dense, and it had caused the cornea to change shape, significantly reducing his vision. So after careful discussion with Colton's parents, Dr. Mian recommended a cornea transplant, which is a surgical procedure to replace part of the damaged cornea with corneal tissue from a donor. The transplant would restore Colton's vision while reducing his pain and improving the appearance of his damaged cornea. In a delicate hour-long procedure, Dr. Mian removed 80% of Colton's cornea and then sutured in the healthy donor's cornea. 6 months after transplant surgery, Colton has nearly 20/20 vision, and there are no signs of rejection, which is always a risk factor for any organ transplantation. Even though he needs to wear protective eyewear whenever he plays sports, he is not scared to do any of the things he loves, like swimming, riding four-wheelers with his cousins, or playing football with his brothers. His mom has a new perspective on safety. She says, "Now we always keep sunglasses and hats in our tackle box." Dr. Mian urges sports eye protection for all children, even if they have never suffered an eye injury. Each sport has its own eye safety standards, so it's important to do your research. Well, in this program, we focused on news as reported by the American Academy of Ophthalmology. Here's a quote for you to think about. "The news and truth are not the same thing." The news and the truth are not the same thing. This was said by Walter Lippmann, an American writer, journalist, and political commentator. He was born a lifelong resident of New York City, born in 1889, died in 1974 at the age of 85. Walter Lippmann, "The news and the truth are not the same." Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.